degenerating axons. He did a number of studies of descending pathways, and he found that this was a pattern he got from a lesion of the whole pyramidal tract. He got a distribution directly to motor neurons, but also throughout the interneuronal pool and extending over to the other side also. These are pathways coming down the left side of the cord. They're also going to the right side, but only that in that ventromedial area, okay? Not to the lateral area very much. He then studied pathways that descend from the brainstem, mostly hindbrain, also midbrain, okay, that follow a lateral course through the hindbrain, and he contrasted those with the pathways that are found very medially, because there's very distinct descending pathways. The lateral ones terminate in mostly in the more lateral interneuronal pool, and the medial pathways terminate ventromedially and also distribute bilaterally. Okay. Now these lateral pathways come largely from the red nucleus of the midbrain. They also come from lateral hindbrain reticular formation, but only the lateral part of the reticular formation. The medial pathways have multiple sources. They come from the midbrain tectum, the tectospinal tract, which we've mentioned before. They come from vestibular nucleus to vestibulospinal tract. There are nuclei in the cerebellum, the deep cerebellar nuclei, if the most medial nuclei in the cerebellum, project directly to the opposite side of the spinal cord, following this same distribution. And many, there are additional pathways, all found in this region, the ventromedial tracts in the cord that come from reticular formation. Large neurons of the medial reticular formation in the hindbrain. Okay, so the next question was, can we separate these functionally, see what an animal can do without them? He found out that if you transect the lateral pathways or the medial pathways, but leave the corticospinal tract intact, the animals recovered fairly completely from the lesion. Okay, so he designed a different kind of study with Lawrence. They started with, these are these pathways, and then we'll talk about the lesions. Let me just explain this figure too. Here I'm showing in a side view of the brain, the monkey brain, and then on our top view of the embryonic brain, I'm showing the same pathways coming from cortex, from motor cortex. And I've separated the ones controlling distal muscles and the ones controlling axial muscles. They have a similar origin, a similar pathway, but the ones controlling axial muscles distribute more uniformly in the cord and also cross to the other side. The ones from lateral terminate mainly in the enlargements, as you would expect if they're controlling the limbs. Here I'm showing the lateral pathways coming mainly from the red nucleus here in the midbrain. The axons cross over and they travel laterally through the hindbrain and distribute mainly to the enlargements. They're joined by neurons in the reticular formation laterally there. Here are the medial pathways coming from the tectum, and I show it here in a cross-section how those neurons send their axons across to the other side to a medial position and descend. And here I'm showing the vestibular nucleus. Okay, the deep nuclei of the cerebellum would have a similar origin. Okay. We know the vestibular nucleus is closely related to parts of the cerebellum. And then I show those axons descending, distributing to both sides of the cord, descending in the medial pathways. Here they are in the hindbrain being joined by reticular formation neurons, the axons of reticular formation neurons in the medial reticular formation. Okay. I'm also showing the pyramidal tract in those same cross-sections. Your textbook figures are harder to understand. You can try to figure them out if you want, but I will not. It's harder to understand these kinds of figures I think mine are better. That's why I give them to you. Okay. So now let's go to this film. What they started with now is pyramidotomy. They eliminated the pyramidal tract in the hindbrain in rhesus macaque monkeys. Then they let the animal recover from that lesion. And then, in the same monkeys, they added one of several different lesions. They added a medial hindbrain lesion. And to get an effect, they found they had to do this bilaterally. You might expect that because we know those pathways distribute to both sides. So if they did it only on one side, they got a lot of recovery. They didn't get so much recovery from the if they did it bilaterally. Then they did lateral hindbrain lesions, also in pyramidotomized monkeys. They also tried lesioning those same pathways further down in the cervical cord. Okay. This is a result that we're going to see. Let's just talk about the lesions once more before we see the film. Pyramidotomy first, and this is where they're making it. Okay? Caudal hindbrain. Now, I'll point out one thing about these lesions that would affect the functional outcome. If they're making the pyramidotomy here, they are sparing neocortical control of the eye muscles. Okay? Because eye muscles are controlled by cranial nerves 3, 4, and 6, and those all exit rostral to that lesion. They exit from the midbrain, 3 and 4, and then nerve 6 originates rostral to where they're making the lesion. They were making it just caudal to the exit of the 6th cranial nerve controlling eye muscles. And then they completely eliminated the pyramidal tract there. So all these axons are degenerating. Then, lesion 2, they went into the hindbrain again from the ventral side. Very difficult to do this surgery, but they were good surgeons and figured out how to do it. They're making a stab wound through the base of the brain. They have to avoid a big artery there. And they were able to transect all these medial pathways. The pyramidal tract was already degenerating, so they could go right through that without any additional effect. And then the third lesion, a unilateral lesion, they would insert a knife from the lateral side and try to eliminate these lateral pathways. I'm showing it here on the cross-section, what they were trying to cut. Now, if they succeeded in getting the rupospinal tract, they should see degeneration or atrophy of neurons here in the red nucleus. So in the film, you will see some histology where they show the red nucleus, and they'll show the if they didn't get a complete lesion, there would be neurons left there in the opposite red nucleus. If they got it all, the large neurons would disappear. Okay. And what we're going to see is the separate control of axial muscles and whole body movements that go with them, and then the distal muscles, especially when digits are moved one at a time. Okay, first we'll just see a normal animal, so pay attention to the dexterity of the animal and how fast he moves, because that will be affected by the lesion. They have him strapped in a chair here. And you'll notice they're very fast. This is normal speed. He's grabbing little pieces of apple there. Okay. Now, some of you may be disturbed when you see these animals with lesions, but remember, we could not find out about these pathways and how they're affected, their function in humans, either without studies like this. It was very good medical reasons for conducting such studies. Then here's their little form board, and the little holes here are varying in size. The animal can use several fingers to get things out of the larger holes. He's a little excited here. But to get them out of the small holes, he has to reach in with one digit. Okay? And if he calms down a little bit, he can do that. If any of you have had pet dogs, you'll know how frantic they get about their food. Well, monkeys do too. Some people do too. Here they have him trying to get him to use one digit. And you can see, just like a person, he's able to do it. Okay. So now we'll see the effects of pyramidal tract lesion 5 months afterwards. So he's had quite a bit of time to recover. This is just the name they gave him. Okay, now they're starting by showing histology. These are all hindbrain. This is the fourth ventricle here. Here's the pyramidal tract at the bottom, very large in the monkey. And it looks black there on a cell stain because there's been such an accumulation of glial cells. The gliosis indicates the lesion. In a myelin stain, which you see here at the bottom, notice that the exons of the pyramidal tract are white. You've got a loss of the myelin in the degenerating tracts. Okay, so we know this animal doesn't have a pyramidal tract from the histology that was done after the death of the animal. He's still got pretty good motor control, but he has a little trouble extending his hands as well, but otherwise he's pretty normal, except that in that form board, he could never use the single digit. He's a little slower, a little weaker. The reason for the little hand exchange, they wanted him to use one hand at a time, so they're holding one hand. Just like for vision studies, where because their visual system is so similar to humans, they're also very useful for the motor studies because their motor control is also similar. So now we should see more severe effects. It's only the film was taken only 12 days later. The histology was done much later, and here you see the demyelinization, the degeneration of the pyramidal tract. You can see, get some evidence of the shredded tissue here from the passage of the knife. And you see the intense gliosis around where the knife passed. This is an animal that, according to many of the neurology textbook, doesn't have any voluntary movement anymore, because he's lost his corticospinal tract. They're showing placing responses there. He reaches up and catches himself when they're bringing him towards the table edge. A little slow there. And he will be more defective only 4 days later because of diaschesis effects. Okay. The histology here shows. The histology was done sooner than after the lesion, but you do see gliosis in the pyramidal tract there. These are just the cell stains. And here you see the damage, direct damage. These are all pictures through the caudal hindbrain at the level of the lesion and a little caudal to the lesion with the fourth ventricle at the top there. So it shows that other descending pathways can control movements quite well. They're defective, they're slower, they're a little weaker, and they don't have the very good digit control. But basically they do pretty well. Even a few days after the lesion, it was surprising how much control they had. A normal monkey would reach the top there in a second or two, This animal's a little weaker, so he's taking longer. But otherwise, he has the same kind of movement control that a normal monkey has in his cage climbing. You'll see monkeys now with other lesions where they do these same things when they add other lesions to the pyramidotomy. Here we're just seeing what they're like with just the pyramidal tract lesion. Yes, this is the same monkey. Every time they switch to another monkey, they'll show the number and how long it was after the lesion when they took the film. Now here, he's reluctant to use his hands only a few days after the lesion. He wants to just reach out and grab it with his mouth. And they need a little longer to recover before they're willing to use their hands at all very much. That's all that showed. Okay, so now we'll start seeing what happens when they add these other lesions. Okay, so 8 months after the pyramidotomy, they did a medial reticular lesion. This is the most severely deficient animal you'll see. It's only 5 days after a knife was passed through the ventral hindbrain here from the bottom, eliminating all the pathways that travel along the near the midline in the hindbrain. You see the demyelinization of the pyramidal tract, and you see the gliosis there of the pyramidal tract. And they were able, from other sections in addition to this one, they were able to reconstruct the path of the knife. Here you see a little cerebellum at the top, so you know you're in rostral hindbrain there. And these are more caudally in the hindbrain. Okay, so this animal couldn't even ride himself for 40 days or so. He looks like he's really paralyzed. You can see evidence of the surgery, they've shaved the hair off his head. Can't right himself. Now why? You know, well, vestibular spinal tract is missing, tectospinal tract. He can't use visual or vestibular information to right himself. He does have somatosensory input coming into the spinal cord, and eventually these animals do recover the ability to right using somatosensory information. But because of the diaschesis effects of these lesions, they cannot do it a few days later like this. See, he can't even sit up. So that's the most deficient one you'll see. So now, a month after the lesion, you'll see they're able to do a bit more. This is a different monkey. You see the effects of the pyramidotomy. And then the reconstruction of the lesion, you'll see some shredding there. Here, the lesion, they're cutting the lesion at a different point in these different sections. So here you see the opening produced by the lesion here, and here you see it lower down just because of the plane of the section. The sections were not made exactly in the plane of the knife cut. So the lesion has to be reconstructed from serial sections. As you can imagine, with the large sections of the monkey brain, it takes a lot of effort to do all this histology on all the monkeys. So, but they did it on every single one. They were good anatomists. Okay, now, first of all, why is the animal strapped in the chair this time? Because remember, he can't stand up very well, can't right himself very well. They want to see, now, if they hold him up in the chair like this, they've got the cuffs on his hand so they can force him to use one hand at a time. And what they're showing is that he has a little trouble extending his hand, but in fact he does have control of his hands. And he can grab the food and put it in his mouth. Okay, so now 6 months after the pyramidotomy, 2 months after the reticular lesion, this is the same monkey. He's regained more control of his hands. They use their hands like a human baby or child. The whole hand is used together because they don't have good individual control of the digits after the pyramidotomy. but they can reach out and grasp the food pretty well. They can overcome this flexor bias the animal has by lying him down in prone position where he extends more readily. But when he's sitting up like this, he tends to hold his hands fairly close to his body. Trembling there is partly due to weakness and also his attempts to overcome the flexor bias. Here you see pretty good placing responses, which were affected by the parietal tract lesion, but he's recovered most of that. Okay, now this is just a different animal 2 months after the second lesion. Showing the pathway of the lesion and the evidence of complete parametotomy. That previous one may have had a little bit of sparing the parietal tracts, but this one is obviously pretty complete. Now this guy, in spite of the medial lesion, he's recovered enough that he is able to walk. He's got some of his somatosensory control back so he can stay upright, but when he walks, he has a lot of trouble orienting. They're not being mean, they're just testing. They want him to chase the apple. And you can see he has a lot of trouble orienting, keeps veering off course. And also falls over fairly easily. Now, if you looked at his eyes, he would have pretty normal eye movements. There's a dissociation in how well they orient with their eyes and how well they orient with their head and body. He's not very good at climbing the cage, but he can do it. They're just using the apple to motivate him here. Okay, so now this is the first one that will show a lateral lesion. 5 days after the lateral lesion at the level of the pons, here's the parametotomy. In fact, you see the gliosis and demyelinization. Here's the wound coming in through the lateral hindbrain. And here's the red nucleus. You see big neurons here, and you see them missing here. So they've succeeded then, even though the lesion doesn't appear to be very big, they've been able to transect the rubrospinal tract at this hindbrain location, fairly rostral hindbrain. Okay. They're calling it the lateral pontine level. So now he's got, on one side, he's got no parietal tract or no rubrospinal tract. And what you want to pay attention to is difference between the two hands. Seems to be pretty good with the left hand, but when they force him to use the right hand, he has some ability to reach, but he has almost no ability at all to grasp the apple. The reason he sometimes can do it is he gets his whole arm involved. If he uses his whole arm, he does better. He can't use the hand by itself. They're going to show films taken over a month of time now. So the left one, he doesn't have any parietal tract control, but he has the rubrospinal tract. It's a lot more trouble. He has to get his whole arm involved, and then he can get it to flex. They try to get him to use the hand by itself, and you can see that it's not just a matter of single digits that he can't control. He can't, he can't grasp unless he does it with the whole arm. So he often just rakes it off the board. So the lesion was fairly small in the hindbrain, but a total difference now between the use of the two hands. Here they're just seeing if they can get better control if they put him in the prone position where he can extend better. And you can see he can control the shoulders and arm, but unless they allow him to use his whole arm, when his hand is extended, he can't grasp. So note here the meaning of the term paralysis. You know, it is not a complete paralysis, and many neurological effects that cause some kind of paralysis are like this. They're not complete paralysis. They're paralysis in certain situations. Okay. And now they got, you'll see some surprising things. You put him in other situations and he uses both hands quite well. In place, and look at this. He's grasping the cage bars perfectly well. You see, because these are whole body movements, and apparently that medial system is able to deal with these organized whole body movements. It's mostly controlled by the medial system. So even without that hindbrain, the lateral system that renders him so unable to grasp an apple doesn't stop him from climbing cages and grasping the cage bars perfectly well with both hands. Okay, so again, pyramidotomy and then the lateral pontine lesion. Okay, now this one, you see the lesion coming in here and here, and you see some neurons on both sides of the red nucleus, so this animal, in fact, should not show as much defect, as much asymmetry. He is missing the pyramidal tract as the other one was. That was why they wanted to see the midbrain, so they could judge the completeness of the lesion here of the lateral brainstem. Their lesion was a little too medial to get all the rubrospinal tract axons. Basically, he uses both hands fairly well. He is more defective on the one, but not as defective as the other animal. We often see lesions that if they spare even 15 or 20% of a pathway, you'll get a remarkable sparing of the function of the pathway. Okay, now this is very similar, except they're making the lesion, the lateral pathway lesion, further down. Okay, so here you see it here, and you'll see up in the red nucleus the loss of the neurons on this side. They've transected them here in the medulla oblongata, the caudal part of the hindbrain. Here you see the pyramidal tract gliosis. He wants to use his foot or his other hand anyway, because he obviously knows that he can't use that hand. In this situation, the fingers seem totally paralyzed, and yet the same monkey, when you allow him to climb his cage, uses the same fingers perfectly well. The type of movement is what makes the difference. Okay, in this case, they were doing the same animal a little bit later. They made a lesion of the opposite dorsal column nuclei because they want to see if they're damaging the medial meniscus when they make these the medial lesions. So they want to find out if that's making any difference. And in fact, it didn't. Deficiencies in sensation were not so affected. Didn't cause these motor defects. Remember, they do have the spinothalamic tract intact. It didn't change the effects of these lesions. There's a little more showing the lesions in the spinal cord, but basically they show the same or even more severe defects. I put this slide in. I'm sorry I didn't. I just did it today, but this is what we just saw. Okay, you can get it on the web if you don't remember the film, or for the people that can't be here today, if you're just listening to this recording, I've summarized in the slide, which you'll have on the web, what we just saw. Okay. The only other things here I want to show you just quickly is that a person, if you have a human being who's quadriplegic because he's usually from a spinal cord lesion where he's lost control, voluntary control of his limbs. All he has is spinal mechanisms controlling his limbs. If he's in a functional imaging machine, okay, and he says, you know, I'm trying to move my lips on the, you will see the lip area of the motor cortex become more active. He says, I'm trying to move my left hand. You'll see the area of motor cortex on the right side become increase in its metabolism and its use of oxygen. Glucose utilization studies show the same thing, indicating that a paralyzed person that's missing these descending pathways still has the mechanisms for controlling them. What he's missing is the connection. It just emphasizes that a lot of lesion effects, a lot of paralysis are disconnection syndromes. It's a general name we can use for this kind of problem. Disconnection syndromes. Okay. I think I won't say much about this at all, except that we saw that the cerebellum also has descending pathways, and the medial nucleus, the medial deep nucleus of the cerebellum, is very much like the vestibular nucleus in its projections. It's part of that medial system. Okay? The more lateral part of the cerebellum, though, has its major output going forward, reaching the motor cortex because it projects to the ventral anterior nucleus and ventral lateral nucleus. Okay? And the effects of lesions there, they do affect reaching. The same kind of movements you saw there in the monkey being affected are affected by cerebellar lesions, but the effects are somewhat different. You know, they will have a tremor when they're trying to reach. They're uncoordinated. Timing and gain control is messed up. I wish I had films to show you these things. And I think for the corpus striatum, we're going to cover this after the midterm, because I think you've been saturated enough right now. So let's just stop the lecture here, and we'll talk a little bit about this after the midterm.